Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast. My guest today is Logan Young, who's a musician, songwriter, and content creator who's known best for his guitar acrobatics on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram. And throughout his guitar playing career, Logan has worked with bands such as Reflections and I the Breather and toured all over in the process. Between 4.2 million views on TikTok, the bands he's been in, his new project, Scarlet Rot, Logan is definitely someone to pay attention to. And I'll just say, I just discovered him randomly in my Instagram feed and just went down the rabbit hole with his videos. They're super cool. It's just him combining styles and making riffs, and it's just sick stuff. It's one of those Instagram channels where it's like, all right, this is a good guitar player. All right, this is an engaging guitar player. All right, this is a unique guitar player. Oh, and it makes really good videos too. And you just, before you know it, you've been watching for like 20 or 25 minutes. Like when that happens, I immediately hit a person up because I need to find out what's going on with them. So anyhow, I'll quit talking. I introduce you, Logan Young. Logan Young, welcome to the Riff Hard Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Anytime. I don't know exactly how I found you, but I just did. One of those days when you're like doom scrolling or just going down the feed at like all the guitar players that
right.
are better than you. And I came across your stuff and it stood out to me because so many people are, you know, in the feed just playing the most insane, fastest stuff you could ever possibly imagine. But like your stuff, it's really cool, musically speaking, and your video titles are always engaging and it always sounds really, really great, which is stuff that I feel like people don't pay attention to those aspects on social media. I think lots of times they're just trying to like impress you with some acrobatic feat.
Right, yeah.
So what I'm wondering is like when you're writing those, are they usually part of a bigger song or are those the ideas that weren't appropriate for a bigger song, but are perfect for a video? Or like, how does that all work?
So I've kind of tackled this in different ways over my time, just kind of posting videos. This is what I originally did. I would sit down, I'd record full songs, and I would take my best riffs from the songs and kind of post those. And then about like a year and a half ago at this point, I started to dive more into just being more consistent, posting more frequently. And I actually just sit down with the intent of writing just a riff, you know, for Instagram, TikTok, just for anything online. And then I kind of just did it with no purpose other than that. And then it kind of turned into recently where it's a great way to gauge how well something will do. So if I post something and it just does really, really well, I know moving forward, okay, I should use this for a song. I should take this and make it into something because obviously people are liking it.
So I think sometimes people are afraid to put something on social media that isn't already released as a song or to like preview a song, but I guess you don't care. Like you're using it as like perfect testing ground.
It's kind of fun because it's like just a library of just ideas, you know what I mean? So when you go watch my stuff, it really is just like, I sat down one day and I had an idea and here's just that. And it's a great way to, I guess, engage with the community and just talk to people about what worked here, what didn't work here, you know, just a starting point for having a good conversation with people.
So when you decided that you were going to start being more consistent with it, what was the change in frequency or like, what were you doing when you, I guess, considered it less consistent versus what you started doing?
I've been on social media like all of us forever. And I thought I was putting a lot of time and effort into it. In hindsight, looking back on it, it really wasn't. I was just, you know, I'd post once every like 2 weeks or something like that. In this day and age, that's just kind of nothing.
It's like basically not even posting.
Yeah, pretty much. And I was sitting there like, oh, wow, why doesn't anyone like grab onto this stuff? You know what I mean? So that's kind of how it started. And then I spent all of my time and effort into the bands that I was in. So that's why I was always focused on writing full songs. It wasn't really about me. It was about the full picture. You know, this is the band. So being in a band, things are a lot less frequent, especially on like a album cycle. So I made it to like a breaking point where, you know, I had a lot of things happen where I left all the bands I was in, and I was actually pretty much ready to just kind of hang it up, just from years of dealing with people and the industry. And I said to myself, I sat down and I was like, well, all this time and effort that I've put into all these different bands that I've been a part of, what would happen if I spent that time and effort on myself and just building, I guess, a brand for myself? And so my original plan was like, I'll put in like a year and then reevaluate. So my plan was I'll make as much content as I possibly can, as many riffs as I possibly can in the next year. And when I get there, I'll see what happened. And, you know, if nobody cares, then I guess I'll be done. You know, nobody cares. Luckily, that's not what happened. So it kind of just kept me pushing forward. So I went from that like one video every 2 weeks to, it depended on when in the year you're asking me, but it started with Christmas time, 2021, I think was the year. And this was kind of my starting point into it. I did this little series called Riffmas, which was just, I posted a riff and it was just covers at the time. It was a riff that I really liked from whatever band that I really liked pretty much every day until Christmas. And that was received really well. And then I just kind of kept it going. So when I started, it was like every day for a month. And then typically, you know, right now I'm at like 4 videos a week. Sometimes I've been at 5. The lowest I've been is if I'm on tour, I'll batch content before I go on tour and I'll do 2 videos a week. But I've never been lower than that. I've always done multiple videos a week.
It seems like once you started doing that, it moved pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing what can happen when, like, you actually try.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought too. I was like, once it started picking up momentum, I was like, man, why haven't I been doing this like this entire time? You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I wonder that sometimes, because usually when I've seen people fail with social media, like music and social media, usually there's some like major thing you can point out, like, well, you thought you were trying, but like in reality, once you decide to like do it seriously, you have like a track record you can look at,
right?
Your posting dates, and you can usually point to, oh, they weren't actually consistent about it.
Yeah, exactly. There's other things too. Like, I feel like a lot of people make excuses about, I don't have the best maybe quality of sound or video. And honestly, when I was first started on, not even 2 years ago, like a year and a half ago, just when I first started, like, it sounded fine. It was okay. I had a terrible camera. It was honestly probably no better than what I could have filmed on my phone. And, you know, that stuff got traction. So I feel like blaming it on the gear is always kind of people's way out, and it's not really justified.
Yeah, within reason. Obviously, like, if it's really terrible,
yeah,
you're going to have a hard time with like stuff that's supposed to sound good.
Right.
But I mean, it can just be okay.
Yeah, it really can just be like average. It really could be just on a phone, even raw audio. Some of those videos just blow up just because somebody's really just got something important to say musically. I think at the end of the day, the thing that makes people stand out, I guess in anything really, is just having like a unique voice. It's not really about being the best or being the epic shredder, because I'm not that guy. I'm not a shredder really. I'm more of a rhythm player, more of like, I just like to riff and make things that are fun. And I think over the years of trying to like develop some sort of sound that felt right to me and being consistent on the internet, people will see I guess, what it is you're trying to say musically. You know, I make everything basically except the vocals, so songwriting. So I think what stands out really is your particular voice in what you're trying to say musically. You know, as people, we all have different opinions and voices, and the same thing translates musically as well. So if you're consistently in front of people, they'll start to recognize kind of your unique twist on things, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think also, like, with developing a unique sound and unique voice, really all you have to do is be consistent about making stuff, because it's in your personality already. If you have a unique personality or an interesting personality, you can develop that through your music, but really you just got to sit there and like make more and get, I guess, closer to what it actually is.
Right.
But I feel like you don't have to invent it from scratch. Same way that you don't have to invent your personality from scratch. It's already there.
Yeah.
So you got to work on your skills and I guess your ability to communicate it. But again, it comes down to consistency.
It does.
But I really think that's kind of the answer to all of it.
Yeah. And I feel like, I mean, developing your sound is like a completely different subject, but it's just the way that I put it when they're starting out, they want to make something. The way that I've done it over the years to the place where I'm at now, I've taken like a lot of inspiration from things. I like a lot of different things. Everything I do is within a metal realm, but I like all different types of metal. So I don't do like just deathcore. I don't do just metalcore or just thrash or whatever it is. I like all of those things. So I try to like combine them all in a way that makes sense to me. And that's kind of how you get your like unique sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the combination of elements and influences in a way that other people haven't thought of exactly that way yet.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about the aspect of titling the videos? It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it really is a big deal. When someone does it well, it can be the difference between clicking on it or not clicking on it. I've noticed that you title your videos extremely well, and the titles are always super appropriate to what is in the video. Sometimes you see people title things and it's like too many words, or it doesn't accurately represent the video, or it's just not interesting, or it's like awkwardly put. So did you spend time consciously getting better at that?
Yeah, I think so over time. Anything with like doing stuff on the internet is very much trial and error. So I think over the time of me doing this, something that always grabs people's attention is anything that asks some kind of question, you know, what is this? Or how do you do this? Or what do you think of this? Where you can get people to talk. I don't always do it. Sometimes I make just blanket statements, but more times than not, it's the best way to get people to like be curious, you know, because by nature, asking a question, people will be curious and it gets them engaged with what you're doing. So I've kind of leaned into that quite a bit, but I've also had videos where I'm just making a statement that it does really well. When it comes to naming things, so the way that I write music is very much like emotional. So I'll sit down. Sometimes I don't really have a purpose, but most times if I sit down, I have some sort of like vibe or word or sentence in mind, which keeps me on a direction of, you know, if I want something super chaotic, I know what I want that to sound like. Or if I want something really sad, I know exactly how to get that across in the way that I'm feeling it. So that helps a lot too when you, I guess, go afterwards, you've already written it and now it's time to title it. You just kind of go back to, what was I feeling at that time? What was I thinking? Mm-hmm. What was the reason for this? And then that kind of naturally flows into the title, which then makes sense.
So based on that, and tell me if this is accurate, because what just came to mind was, if that's how you're doing it, you probably have to do it quickly so that you don't lose what that feeling was. I'm just saying, and you could be totally different. It's like when I sit down to write something I call it the light bulb turning on, and it's just like I'm in it. And my emotions are kind of guiding my ear, and then my ear like feeds into that. It's like hard to explain, but like hours will go by and then there'll be this awesome piece of music afterwards. Whereas when the light bulb doesn't come on, that's the stuff that kind of just doesn't get used as much. And what I've noticed is if I don't like capitalize on that emotion when it's happening, it becomes very, very difficult to put myself back exactly in that head state unless I like leave myself breadcrumbs or something. But I don't know, you could be totally different. I mean, like if I was to like get really into writing something, then didn't look at it for 6 months, I might still like it. It's just going to be really, really difficult to like put myself back in that headspace.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if it's over time like that too. I had an album that I wrote back in like 2020 and I was struggling to get vocals done on it. And then it was finally completed a couple months ago. And I went back and listened to the songs and I was like, I can't put this out. This just isn't me anymore. You know what I mean? I just can't do it anymore. You know, like I've completely like stylistically, emotionally just moved on from where I was 3 years ago. So totally. I had to pull the plug on it.
I completely understand. It's a tough one though, at least for me, because I have this thing about songs not sounding the same, at least as far as Doth is concerned. Like I don't want songs to sound interchangeable. One of my complaints about a lot of bands is that if you take a record, oftentimes you could cut out a piece from like song 9 and put it on song 2. And if it's in the same key in a similar tempo, oftentimes won't even know that it was supposed to be for a different song. Right. That's not like a value judgment, because like I think that there's some bands that kind of do a consistent thing. And that's awesome. That's their thing. But for me, that's kind of like, I want every song to have a very, very distinct identity. And what I've noticed is when writing over a short period of time, like writing a record in a few months or like one time period, it's both a blessing and a curse, because you won't have that problem you just said of like, you're no longer that person. You're trying to finish something where you have long moved on. It will be current. It'll be fresh. But then at the same time, the flip side is it might get samey.
Yeah.
And you might find yourself repeating ideas just because that's the headspace you're in. And if you're not careful about it, track 7 will have the same or close to the same idea as like something in track 2 or whatever. And I find that I have to be like way more conscious about that.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that happens when you're writing a record. One of my favorite metalcore albums, I guess modern metalcore albums, is Current's first album, The Place I Feel Safest. Mm-hmm. I like that record a lot. They might not. I don't know how they feel about it, but I like it a lot as a listener. And it's like over an hour long and it doesn't feel like it is. It's 13 songs, something like that. I feel like all those songs kind of have way different vibes from each other.
They have their thing.
Yeah, they could all really just be like singles, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes a really good album, and kind of what I've been trying to do recently with just music is if it's not a single, I don't think I want to release it. You know what I mean?
Like single worthy?
Yeah, exactly. If it's not good enough to stand on its own, you probably shouldn't put it out.
Yes, actually, I was talking to my vocalist about this. Before we got signed again, we were totally cool to not make a record and to just put out singles. And then basically we adapted with the situation. Like Metal Blade came along and made a really good offer and understood our situation. And so it made sense to do that. But our argument for not making a full length or to just do singles was, well, how often have you made a full length where you put all this time into it, you devote your life to it, and then you look at the numbers and you look at people's reaction and you know that second half of it is just pretty much ignored.
Yeah.
relative to the first half. And it's just such a bummer because it's not like you put less time into those songs towards the end. It's just, you put them at the end for a reason, which is you're probably not as stoked about them as the ones up at the front in general. And then it's not that they're not good. Like, there's plenty of records that are good the whole way through, or that there's great songs towards the end. But I think in general, there's a reason for why stuff gets put to the back. And I think that, like, the solution there is to not treat those songs like they have to exist. It's like, if they're not good enough to be up at the front, maybe they're just not good enough, period.
Yeah.
And you should write something else.
Yeah. And the way that music is now too, people don't really, I love listening to albums. I usually put on full albums, but it's albums that I have almost no skips. Mm-hmm. But nowadays people just go through playlists. They'll just hear one song and they're like, all right, I'm good. I want something different now. And that's why albums that have different kind of sounds and vibes throughout do really well, because that's what people want now. They want to hear different dynamics throughout a record, especially if it's going to be a full length that's, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. You have to give them something different. It can't just be the same thing over and over again.
No, and I feel like bands that do that successfully, like the same thing or close to the same thing, it works if you're older. Like, if you're from a generation up, I'm older than you, but I mean generation up from me. I think that if you already have a career by this point in time, like a long track record, I'm not going to call out any band names just because I don't want people to misconstrue that I'm like talking shit, because the bands I'm thinking of, I actually like them. But I think that it's also a generational thing. If you were established in a time period where it wasn't singles that made it happen and you got known for this brand and the brand is super consistent, it works really well with that older generation who grew up listening to records that way. But if you're aiming for 40 and under.
Yeah.
And even more so with 30 and under, and like even more so with 20 and under. But really, if you're like 40 or 45 and under is like who listens to you, you really, really should be thinking about either the singles approach or full lengths, where it is like a collection of, I don't want to say like just fragments, but single worthy songs.
Yeah. Cause you also have to be careful of, like, if you're making an album, it can't be all completely different ideas where it's like, this doesn't make sense together. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It all still has to make sense together. But within just metal music, I love so many different genres. Like, maybe one song can be leaning more towards one thing. You can get the deathcore vibe. You can get the metalcore vibe. You can get the like prog or like genty kind of thing going on, but all still like sound like, oh, this band wrote it.
Yes, it has that unique voice. By the way, I appreciate a lot that you are leaning into how into metal you are, because it bothers me when metal musicians basically downplay it or act like they're too cool for metal or something. Like, that's what they play. That's all they've ever done. Maybe they've done a couple things on the side. Basically, their career is metal and has always been metal. If they talk shit about it, like, they're too good for it. And I don't know. That's always bugged me, because metal is awesome. And it's such a diverse genre, if you can even call it a genre. It's like such a diverse kind of music. There's such a broad spectrum to it. You can live in the metal world artistically and never get repetitive if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, definitely. I think the metal world is interesting. I love it. I mean, I keep talking about it. It's what I do. It's my favorite thing. It's why I even play at all. I really wouldn't want to play anything else, but I do feel like things are changing, but metal has become a lot more stale out of the mainstream. I mean, it used to be really almost like a mainstream genre. I think what is lacking from metal that other genres do have, and this is something that I've been like actively trying to promote with what I do, is like just collaborations with different types of people and different genres and different ideas. Metal people they kind of seem to want to stick to the formula.
Yes.
And some of my biggest songs on my solo stuff is me collaborating with like a scream rapper. He does like trap beats with scream rapping. Those two genres to me feel like they go really well together. A lot of the people who have influences for scream rapping, they also listen to metal. And I think combining the two is really cool. And people do that, but it's not as common as you would think. And then just like blending different ideas together. That's kind of what I've been doing recently with my posts, is just blending in like, oh, what happens if you do synthwave and metal? What happens if you do orchestral and metal?
It's awesome.
Like just a bunch of random things. It's like, here's what it would sound like and how it works. Like, why don't we just do this more? Let's get less white neck bearded men in this genre and like expand our horizons a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, that is actually when I came across your Instagram and rabbit holed it. That was the reason I hit you up to do this, actually, was you're an awesome player and stuff, but there's lots of awesome players. That's not enough for me to just reach out to a stranger. What really like did it for me, though, I wanted to invite you on, was the reason that I kept watching more and more and more of the videos and rabbit holing was because of the way that you were combining outside influences into metal and not making it sound forced or hokey.
Yeah.
Or something. Because sometimes I feel like people will try to do that and it will sound inauthentic.
Yeah.
Doing it as a novelty. And what I really, really like about the way you do it, it's like organic. The way that you arrange it, it makes perfect sense in a metal context. And I think back, you know, like, I guess it's a little bit more, I wouldn't say oldest school, but old school at this point. Because I remember when Dimmu Borgir first started using a real orchestra on their records. And they had like legit orchestrations and legit like soundtrack quality composition in the orchestral arrangement. And it was so well done. It was such a organic and sick combination of the two different worlds that it was super captivating and super epic. And there's such a difference between, for instance, the way that they did it versus when you would hear people just putting a weird string patch.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Like whatever style you're combining, there's a way to do it to where it sounds organic. And I think that it comes down to how well you understand what it is that you're trying to do and like how much emotional intent there is in the writing. If there's emotional intent in the writing and an organic piece of music, you can kind of combine anything and it'll work.
Yeah. There's definitely been times where I've tried to combine things and it totally doesn't work. And then I just delete it.
Yeah.
But I think the beautiful thing about it is there is crossover. Like if somebody likes X music, somebody likes metal, somebody who likes dubstep might click on my video because it's tagged in it or whatever. And they'll be like, oh, wow. I never thought that I would like this, but it's kind of bringing something familiar to me, but also giving me something different and I dig it. So maybe I should check out some other stuff in this realm and see if I like it. And then, you know, now they're listening to Infant Annihilator. You know what I mean?
That's kind of funny. Your Instagram is it's a gateway to Infant Annihilator.
Well, kind of. I am in a band with Dickie Allen.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah, we've got a small project that we just started up in the beginning of the year called Scarlet Rot.
Oh, that's with him. Okay, that's cool. Infant Annihilator is one of those bands that I've always just thought that they're fucking hilarious in a really good way. It's like super sick, and their videos, shit is great.
Yeah, I love it because it's obviously like a parody of deathcore. But
it's so good though.
Yeah, if you take away the visuals and you don't know them, the music's still really awesome. You know what I mean? Like it's not like the music's cheesy. It's not that kind of parody.
Exactly. That's kind of my point about the combining styles or like anything you do. It can't feel forced. When it comes down to the art itself, it has to have like actual vision and like actual feeling. And then, yeah, you can do anything. I'm curious about something. Your videos sound really good. Are you mixing it yourself?
So I started mixing it myself. I got to a certain point and I got a main guy who produces all my stuff. He's kind of up and coming. His name's Scott Siegel. I guess the most notable thing that he's done is the new Woe Is Me song. He is really, really just a hidden gem in like metal producing world.
I'm going to look into this dude. Yeah, your videos sound great. So he produces you. Tell me about that.
I sat down with him one day and I was like, I've got to a certain point with my demo tracks, because that's what I think of like my Instagram videos and stuff. It's just my demo tracks. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I've made it to a certain point. I want to take it a little bit step further. I really like what you do. Can you help me make this better? So we sat down and we made a template together that just took what I was doing and like brought it up to the next level. And then from there, I made just stylistic edits of what works for me and maybe what works for the particular idea that I have. But he gave me like a really good template starting point from what I was already doing. And he was familiar with my sound. But working with Scotty, what was your question about that? I'm sorry.
I was just wondering what the process is. So like he gave you a template that you then tweaked or are tweaking based on what you're working on. And then where does it go from there? Like you send it to him to mix?
Yeah.
I guess so, what's a day in the life of your typical Instagram video?
So in the Instagram video, it's pretty much just me sitting down with the template that I started with and he made better. And then I edited a little bit more. I pretty much just use that. And then depending on the idea, I'll edit it accordingly a little bit more. But for the most part, it's pretty set and it works really well for just busting out 20-second ideas. When it comes to like full songs, I use my demo template and I'll send it to him. And with what I do for my solo stuff, kind of all over the place lately with, you know, I've been working with the Scream Rapper guy, which is a different sound from working with Dickie Allen from the more deathcore stuff that I haven't released yet. I'm working on a few songs with Adam Warren for some deathcore solo releases. I'll get random people to do like my most recent one that I just got back was kind of like a spirit boxy octane sort of song where it's more like palatable, I guess, with singing. So every song really needs to be mixed to fit that sound. So they need to be mixed differently. And mm-hmm. I love and hate mixing. Like when I'm working on just demos, it's really fun to kind of get lost in it. But if I'm working on like a full song release, it's just so much better to send it to someone else to get a second set of ears.
Fuck yeah, it is.
You know what I'm going for. Like you can hear it. You know what I'm doing, what I'm trying to do. And mm-hmm. it's really awesome to bring somebody else's like spin on it in, because then you'll hear songs in a way that you wouldn't have maybe imagined it, but it came out cooler than you thought. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. That's why I always have somebody else mix my stuff. And I've always pretty much done that just because a good mixer that understands your music, they can take it somewhere that you would never have done.
Yeah.
In lots of ways better.
Definitely.
That's my experience. When like a really good mixer mixes my stuff, I feel like that's when the potential in the track really gets realized. Like that's when it finally doesn't sound like my own bullshit anymore, I guess.
Yeah. And I feel like when you mix your own stuff, you kind of get in like a silo as well. You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
I think most of my like new ideas after a demo is made is when someone else is mixing it and I hear it in a different way and I'm like, oh, maybe we should try this instead.
Totally. Okay. So with the videos and the stuff you write for them, what's the average turnaround from the point that you sit down to work on an idea till the point that it's posted?
So right now I've kind of got a little bit of a schedule. So I work 9 to 5 through the weekday, Monday through Friday. And then Friday, I actually get off a little early. I get off at 4. So Friday night and Saturday all day are my days where I just sit down and I'm like, I'm going to do as much as I possibly can these days. Some days it's not that much. Some days it's like 8 riffs, 10 riffs. It just depends on how inspired I am. But typically, if I sit down with the intention to write something, I'll typically get something, a riff or two done in like an hour to 2 hours, something like that.
Got it. A day where you're like productive and feeling good. So an hour to 2 hours and you have like a riff. And does that mean like the full riff along with like whatever the melody or the lead patch or like whatever is like the flavor, I guess, the full thing?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say an average, just one riff probably takes me like 40 minutes, just 100% complete.
Okay. So you have the riff, then what? It's Friday, you sat down at 4 and it's now 6 p.m. You got a riff.
So I like to do, I guess, more than one at a time. So I probably try to do 2, maybe 3, depending on the day. Once I have a batch of that, like 3 to 4 to 5, then I sit down and film it. That part's pretty easy, just filming it. And then I put it in Final Cut Pro just to make it look a little bit better than just raw camera footage. But that's pretty much all I do in that. I just add like a little shaky camera effect and color grade it a little bit so it just looks better than a raw video. And that's pretty much the completed process.
Okay, so you bounce it through the template, get it into the video editor, do some basic stuff, and then do you schedule it out for social or are you manually posting?
I have like a kind of a schedule in my head, but I manually post all of them.
It's a way to go. And I don't know why, because like technically a scheduler could work, but I've noticed that, and I'm sure there's exceptions, but most of the time, the people I know that are most effective with social media, whether it's their YouTubers or whatever it is that they do, or their neck of the woods is, the ones I know that are like doing great tend to manually post most of their stuff. And I'm not sure what that is, but I just noticed this.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just having your feet on the ground, just being there every step of the way. And like,
yeah,
typically if you're going through the effort of all the stuff I'm doing up to like even manually posting, probably you care a little bit more than somebody who's just kind of going through the motions, scheduling stuff out. I really like to talk to people. I like to have my feet on the ground and know what's going on, especially like in the genre, how people feel, if something didn't work, if something did work. I like to be there for all of it, every step of the way. It's just part of the process.
You're just connected to it that way. I feel like with batching too much stuff, there are times when batching is what you have to do, like you said, like when you're going on tour or something. But I feel like there's an amount of batching that's too much. And it's too much because you will lose touch with what's going on. You'll get out of sync with the world, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
By batching too much.
Yeah.
Do you have time to actually practice guitar? Do you work that in at all?
No, not in like a traditional sense of like sitting down, practicing scales or chords or whatever technique, I suppose. When I started playing guitar, which is actually my last instrument I picked up, I started playing when I was like 14, and I wouldn't even say I was playing. The reason I picked it up was to help write music for the band I was in. I was doing vocals at the time, and my entire purpose for playing the instrument was I saw how much fun everybody was having writing the music, and I couldn't do anything other than vocals, and I was like, oh, I want to be a part of this. So the way that I look at it now, with that being kind of my starting point too, is me coming up with ideas and writing and just always staying on the instrument in some capacity is kind of my way to practice. Like that Friday, Saturday of, I'm just going to write something today. That is kind of my form of practicing.
So whatever gets you playing the instrument the most,
yeah,
is what matters the most. And I think that like traditional practice isn't for everyone. And if that type of playing doesn't engage you, pushing too hard on it, it could fuck with your passion for working on music and lower your output, I guess. So I think it's important to understand why you're doing it. Music in the first place, like, why do you even play guitar? Like, what got you into this in the first place? And why do you still do it? And like, try to tap into that as much as possible.
Yeah, I've tried to go down the music theory route and sit there and learn scales. And every time I do, I just end up hating guitar. You know what I mean?
Well, then don't do it.
Yeah. So I always go back to just, I'm just going to write because this is what makes me happy. And this is why I like playing. So, and this keeps me on the instrument for hours, you know, like I'm just going to create something. There's something beautiful about sitting down with maybe just either nothing or just a fraction of an idea and then being done and having like something, a full song that you can listen to. There's like something really blissful about that.
Something that didn't exist before.
Right.
It's fucking cool. Do you ever get this feeling too, like when you finished writing something, it's like hard to understand how it even happened? How did I even think of that?
I actually have that with like the Scarlet Rot stuff. So the stuff that I'm doing with Dickie is very like chaotic, very like Danza-esque stuff where it's just all over the place, very linear song structure. And when I was writing that stuff, I was going through a lot. I was going through a lot of bad stuff in my life. And I really didn't even write it for anything. I had no intention of putting it out or writing it for a project. I truly sat down with the instrument, just like really hurting. And I was like, what can I do with this? You know, I'd finish a song and I'd listen back to it. And I'm like, wow, this is the perfect representation of the pain that I feel right now, where sometimes I listen to those songs like as they're coming out right now, because we're in the middle of putting them out. I wrote these about a year ago or so. And I'm like, whoa, this feels weird going back to that place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Weird going back to it, but seems kind of necessary to do at the time.
Yeah.
I guess that also is kind of what I was talking about earlier about breaking up writing into too long. It's hard to put yourself back in like another head state, especially if you were going through something particular at that point in time when you were creating. It's like, how do you recreate that feeling if you've already moved past it?
Yeah, it's hard. You know, it can be done, especially if it's something traumatic. It's pretty easy to think about what happened and kind of get yourself back there. But if you've already moved on and you've, you know, I guess, written your song or whatever about it, it just kind of feels wrong to go back there.
Yeah, exactly. It's strange. You brought up Danza. You've got elements of that in what you do, like the pitch shifting, like the tapping, intensely heavy break sections. Like there's just all kinds of crazy elements that require also kind of understanding how to tweak sounds and I guess use technology too.
Yeah.
Do you sit down and like actively try to learn the techniques involved with all that crazy shit? Or is it literally just a part of your writing? You want to get this sound, and so you just go for the sound, figure it out.
For this particular example with like Josh Travis, that dissonant tapping, that sound, that Danza sound. Mm-hmm. I never learned like a Danza song, and I kind of don't want to either because I feel I will take a little bit too much from him. It was more of I sat there and just consumed Danza 3 and 4 a lot, and there was something about it that I latched onto, and then I watched his playing, and I was like, I like this a lot. but I want to do it in a way that is not Josh Travis. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
It's very hard to do, especially with a sound that is very particular like that. There's recent years, other bands kind of doing that sound, like Darko, which makes sense because Baby J was in a band with Josh for years. So it makes sense that he would take a lot of influence from him. But I wanted to do that sound in a way that felt like, oh, okay, similar, but this is Logan doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You just said something that I have opinions about, which is learning other people's stuff. So sometimes I do it. Like, it's good to learn covers. Yeah. It's a good thing to do. It's a part of getting good at music. However, I feel like you got to be careful. You got to be careful because anything you learn is going to come out through what you do. If you don't want to sound like you're leaning too hard into somebody else's style, or you don't want somebody else's identifiable thing coming out through what you do, I think you got to be real protective, I guess, over your creativity and not make it a part of how you play. Yeah. Consciously not do that.
I don't really do it anymore, but something I used to do, this is actually a really great way to take influence and develop your own sound. It's a great technique for this. I used to learn not full songs. I used to learn just my favorite riffs. And I would be like, I love this sound and I want to have something like this, but I don't want it to be this. So I would learn basically the riff. So you get familiar with what are the note choices, what are the chord choices, the intervals that are being used. And then I would rewrite the riff in my own way, which would take it to be similar, but different. And then after doing that for a while, it kind of further and further goes away from what that original sound was, just like reconstructing somebody else's idea in a way that makes more sense to you. It's a great way to kind of develop a unique sound.
Yeah. You know, I think that, and the same goes for guitar exercises and stuff. If you want to practice guitar exercises, like scale exercises, patterns, all that kind of stuff, if you want to do that and not kind of sound stock or whatever, thing you can do is take a scale exercise and change it to be a note choice that you actually like, or whatever, like do anything to make it your own. It's a really, really good technique, I think, for getting outside of other people's boxes.
Yeah, definitely.
Logan, I think this is a good place to stop the episode. I want to thank you very, very much for coming on. Like I said, I love your stuff and it's been a pleasure and very, very interesting hearing how you go about things.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I was I was shocked when you hit me up because I just feel like I'm just some dude on the internet, you know? So
I mean, we're all just some dude on the internet.
Yeah, I guess so. But no, I really appreciate it, man. It's been awesome. You're a legend. I appreciate you very much. This was awesome.
Anytime, man. Anytime. Thank you.